Thank you. So my prime affiliation is the Max Planck Institute for Psycholinguistics, where indeed I have an important job with the language archive, as it calls itself, modestly. But here I'm representing the EUDOT project, European Data. And also I am active within Clarin and Dashis. Clarin is one of the S3 projects for the social sciences and humanities, and Dashis is an S3 cluster project. I'm not going to explain it. If you know what a cluster project is, you are happy, right? Where are we here for? Data can be a boon, can be a curse. For the scientists that have access and that know how to process it, it's probably a boon. For those that have to design and think out the systems that manage all that data, well, it's a bit problematic. I think it has never been so easy to create data, while at the same time it's still not that easy to manage it, right? Experimental data, terabytes, sensory produced data, simulations, digital libraries, that's something you should know something about. They are becoming more and more available, not storing only text, but also multimedia, and that brings quite a few new challenges. And the web itself is, of course, a interesting source of scientific data. So, how to deal with that? How to store, how to administrate, how to find, to enrich, to link between the data, in the data, to things outside the data, to share, and don't see share too narrow. Sharing also means that you somehow have to make it compatible, interoperable with somebody else's environment. To reuse, I think we all want to go to a situation where data that is produced within one discipline, and that's interesting for another one, could be used by the tools of that other discipline. I mean, that's really that would be really something if we can do that. And finally, to publish, and that's where you come in. Okay, for this we need a data infrastructure. Data infrastructure that's efficient, sustainable, and cost-effective. So that means you have to share the burdens. Whatever we do, it has to support what we call the data life cycle or the data creation cycle that has become, let's say, more standard now within scientific practice, or that we hope it will become more practice within science, than the old model where you simply had raw data, you would do your analysis, and you would make a publication. Nowadays, we have raw data. That's only temporary data. You do an analysis and enrichment, and then you can do again an analysis, etc., etc. You can make it into referable data. That means you somehow register it so that it becomes accessible to other tools and services. And it can become citable data, and that's a step further. That means you really have to be, how to say, sure about quality of the data. Peer review, perhaps, although peer review for data sets is another challenging issue. And finally, you can create a publication on the basis of your data. So everything we do, it has to support this as the base. Well, if you look at the current data infrastructure landscape, you see that there have been things going on for years, and some organizations and some institutes have really been powerful there. I particularly refer to CERN here. The last years, we have had this wave of S3 projects that want to create research infrastructures for particular communities, and that for these purposes also create data management services. However, looking at this, most of this stuff is primarily targeted to the needs of one single community or discipline. But the challenges remain the same, right? Compatibility, interoperability, if you want to do cross-disciplinary research. These infrastructures are also challenged by the data growth in volume and complexity. And there is a strong cost factor there. So there are opportunities here, opportunities to take common things together. Although all the disciplines have their own preferences, their own ambitions, their own priorities, we think we can take commonalities and offer generic, general data management services to maybe not all, but at least a few of them. But for this, we need a plan. Some strategy is needed at a European level. And people have been working on this. And maybe you have seen this picture. It's quite, it pops up all the time in many different presentations. It's called Collaborative Data Infrastructure. It kind of divides the landscape up into three layers: data providers, data users, and then a community-specific processing layer, and at the basis, the common data services that is for things like persistent storage, identification, authentication, authenticity, workflow execution, and data mining. This model was first introduced by this report from the high-level expert group, Riding the Wave, and it was further worked out and endorsed by people who thought to be funny enough to call it a surfboard for riding the waves. But it is quite appropriate. What we are doing within EUDOT is offering, trying to build services at that lowest level of the common data services. So we have this project, EUDOT, European Data. We have started only last year in October, so we do not have yet this wonderful infrastructure from Data One, but we're hoping to get there. We have we think, sufficient amount of money, a good group of partners from 13 countries, and we've got an objective to deliver this cost-efficient and high-quality collaborative data infrastructure. We want to do that in a flexible and a sustainable way, but also in a bottom-up way, so that it's not, let's say, us or the data centers that are imposing their model, their ideas on the communities, but that it are the research communities that are primary in deriving the requirements for this data infrastructure. These are the logos of the consortium. There are a lot of strong computing and data centers there, but also a few communities. In fact, we've got five core communities. First, there is Clarin, which is my own background. Clarin tries to bring language resources and technology to social sciences and humanity researchers. There is EPOS, Earth scientists, people who measure earthquakes, etc. There is LifeWatch. They do biodiversity, bird counting, if you want to characterize it shortly. There is ENES, the climate people. And there is VPH, the virtual physiognomical human, which deals with making models for the human body from the lowest level, from the cellular level, up to organs and up to the complete corpus. We have had interviews with all these core communities, and key messages of that is that the data landscape analysis turns out that these communities are at very different stages of development. It's heterogeneous, but we already can say they have similar patterns of need. But the challenge is, because they are still developing, because not all the participants within those communities are even at the same level of IT proficiency, for instance, it is a bit like shooting at a moving target, and that proves to be an extra challenge. So currently we have these five core communities, but we are planning to extend into a second layer of communities. So for instance, to the physical sciences and engineering and to material science, where we do not yet have any community on board. But although we have core communities and though we have, let's say, core disciplines, EUDA targets all scientific disciplines. We want to be discipline neutral. So we want to involve scientists from all the communities in the shaping of this infrastructure. How do we work? Well, there is of course the the stage of requirements, deriving at the right requirements, building the corresponding services, deploying them, and then starting again at to see if what we have done is correct. I won't bore you with this too long, because there might be some subjects that you are more interested in. Yes? So we have made a classification of what kind of services we want to offer, and grossly we can divide into community-oriented services, things like simple data access and upload, long-term preservation, shared workspaces, execution and workflow, joint metadata and data visibility, and something called a simple storage facility for individual scientists and small projects. Then there are also what we call enabling services, so services that are already out there and that would be foolish to ignore, because we can probably incorporate them and we probably need them. Although we got a few millions, we cannot fund everything. So if there is a service out there that's usable, we probably want to use it. So for instance, for persistent identifiers, we want to use EPIC, the European Persistent Identifier Consortium and DataCite. For federated AI service, we want to use the national NRNs and Edugain. And, well, there are, of course, network services and monitoring and accounting services, such as, for instance, are offered by EG, the grid people. They have lots of experience in measuring if your service is up or down and how efficient you are in doing that. Let me go into a bit more of detail in these data management service cases, as we call them, what we are planning there. So we have, for instance, a safe replication service case. This is about replicating data between selected centers. So for instance, there is a community center that generates data, or there is a sensor at a community center that generates data, and that data has to be put into storage, long-term preservation. So maybe a few copies have to be made of it, maybe it has to be pushed to another data center because, it's better, it's more efficient that the research group over there has direct access to it. There can be many reasons. Technology is not so different for this. We use IROTS, which is suitable middleware, which we think can help us there. There is the dynamic replication, data staging, which is about moving data to workspaces where high-performance computing centers can have their go with the data, and where the data afterwards has to be stored again at the data centers. There is this usable PID framework, which we have to do, and where we hope we can use existing services. But these existing services must then cater for our needs, such as facilitate for administrating data replication. With data replication, you get multiple copies of things, so you have to administrate this somehow, link different locations with a single identifier, a single data identifier. You want persistent identifiers to be able to identify not only big objects, but also part of objects. Think here of segments of multimedia recordings, for instance. Then there are some small requirements like data verifiability. You want to ensure that somebody who uses a data object can check if that's still the same data object as that was stored in the data center at the beginning. Technology for DIX exists. You have the handle system, which both EPIC and DataCite use. And finally, to top it up, we need a center registry that registers what are the EU.data centers, what capabilities do they have, what are the EU.services, and where can centers and users find these. Other data management service cases is, for instance, the joint metadata domain. What we think to do there is, but we're not quite sure yet, I mean, we are still, for these service cases, we are still thinking about what our ambitions should be. But anyway, a metadata catalog for all, I mean, that's the question mark. Do we only do it for data that has been really parked at EU.data centers, or are we ambitious and do we want to create a metadata catalog for all research data out there? Such a metadata catalog is, of course, crucial for the interdisciplinary reuse or repurposing of data. Somebody mentioned this already. There's a question of terminology there, of course, because different disciplines use different terminology to describe data objects, right? So not everybody is content with using Dublin Core to characterize a video recording. So if you have a limited number of disciplines for which you want to create a single metadata catalog, what you could do is, for instance, hard code, hardwire the mappings between the different metadata fields that are used by the different disciplines. But this is quite a challenge if you get a lot of disciplines on board. In that case, you probably want to make a flexible system where you demand of the different communities that they make the semantics of their metadata schemas explicit, and where you allow a flexible system of relations between the registered metadata concepts, so that at request of the user, he can copy, for instance, the creator metadata field from Dublin Core on, let's say, the author metadata field from some other disciplines, and make sure that if he uses this single metadata catalog, he gets the maximum retrieval possible. Another thing that has to be decided is the thing about granularity. What do we do here? In my institute, we have metadata available for every single resource, for every annotation file, for every multimedia recording. I mean, this is not all that typical. Other disciplines simply have metadata for collections or data sets. So there we have to make a decision. Or maybe we find a system to accommodate both. A commenting function. This was mentioned by some of our core communities as a desirable function. The idea is the following. People that use data sets or reuse data sets from other disciplines would like to be able to comment on its usability within their domain so that others could profit from it. This is not, I mean, you could look at it as being metadata also, but in fact it is something else, because metadata is usually under the control of the creator, or at least the steward of the data set or the data object, while the commenting is, of course, under control of the users of the data set, right? So commenting function and a platform permitting data set promotion. And with that, it is meant that, well used or data sets that are found suitable can have what you call status points, kudos. Okay, we think also the technology is not that difficult to find. We've got ICAT, Bill just showed Mercury. I think all this technology is in place, except perhaps things to solve this semantic interoperability problem. And the last surface case I wanted to mention is the Simple Store, a safe repository for all research data in need. There we are still discussing if we want to use the YouTube model or the Dropbox model. You can see the YouTube model is geared mainly towards persistency, while the Dropbox model is more geared towards sharing, right? Because sharing, I mean, this is a thing you can, of course, force if from people if they use this facility. You can, of course, say, well, you can store your data at our site, but we require that you store it. But you might scare away some people that still have valuable data. So this should be considered carefully. And then there's the question of metadata. Do we want detailed metadata or do we just want superficial metadata? There you have the same dilemma. If you ask for detailed metadata, people will probably not bother. And if you ask for superficial metadata, well, they will probably give it, but the data metadata will maybe not be of that much use. Okay, let me go through that fast because I have 5 minutes, right? Okay, so go through this. This is what we think how our architecture will look like. So we've got EU.community centers. These are places under control of the different disciplines, the different communities, and this is where the data is generated. Data is copied, is replicated to EU.data centers that, for instance, have facilities for long-term archiving or facilities for high-performance computing. To keep track of all the copies, all the replicas, we need a PID service that's able to do that. So once you have the identity of a data object, you're able to find all the copies and all the replicas. We need a center registry so that we can find all the centers, community centers and data centers and services. We'll build a EU.metadata service that will harvest metadata from the different community centers. And we'll have an EU.simple store facility that enables researchers to put data directly in the EU.data infrastructure. Collaborations, well, we're not alone, right? And we have the directive, I would say, to cooperate with the communities we are working for. They have to supply us with the requirements. So we're working with the S3 projects and the S3 cluster projects. We're working with service providers as Epic and DataCite, for instance, for the persistent identifiers. We will collaborate with the grid people, EGI, although there is a possibility of a little competition there too, because EGI also does some data management, just as we think we can do some computation facilities. We hope to collaborate with our US colleagues, with Data One and with Data Conservancy. And there is an important thing, we want to collaborate with all the data scientists, all the people that are working on this, to establish something we call DAATF, Data Access and Interoperability Task Force. And this task force should contribute to creating a model for working, managing data that allows us to be so efficient possible in creating data, metadata services that will closely connect to all the different communities. This work will be driven forward by both EUDAT and OpenAIR. Okay, that was it. If you have questions, please.